Hey, before this new episode starts, I just wanted to say a quick little message that the show is going to be a little bit different than some of the normal ones that we do. I did a little casual interview with Kevin Goldberg, who, in my opinion, is probably the biggest podcast expert that's writing on the internet right now. And we had a really cool conversation about sort of the industry, where stuff is going. He recently wrote a story on how people are gaming the iTunes charts, which is pretty incredible. And he talks a little bit about the piece and what it was like to see Bill Simmons retweet a story and say that it was really well written. So we talk a little bit about that stuff. It gets a little bit nerdy, I gotta be honest. It gets a little bit nerdy throughout, but I hope you enjoy it. It's a little bit different from what we normally do, but without any further ado, here is my conversation with Kevin Goldberg. If I don't want to take up too much of your time, so if you want to just help story get started, I taped a little bit of an intro a little bit earlier, so I'm ready to rock and roll if you're good.
Cool, yeah, start it up.
All right, so now we are welcoming on to the show Kevin Goldberg of DiscoverPods.com. In my opinion, maybe one of the smartest people about podcasts in the industry. Wow, yeah, I know, what an open. But yeah, one of the really smartest people I know who talk about and write about podcasts on a weekly basis. So, Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll have to. I'll send you your payment later. So, for the kind words.
PayPal and Venmo are accepted. So, all right. Well, the first thing I wanted to ask you was a little bit about yourself. So, you started DiscoverPods.com. How long ago?
Just over a year ago, actually. Yeah, we hit our 1 year anniversary and it was anticlimactic, but yeah, the site's been trucking along. It's gained some traction. We're lucky enough to have people read our stuff, so it's awesome.
Well, I have to ask because, for a lot of people, podcasts are perhaps not the sexiest thing ever. So, like, why did you end up, writing about podcasts? Like, what particularly about them sort of brought you towards it?
Sure. Yeah. Good question. And I'll be the first to admit, having a blog about podcasts is an extremely basic premise, right?
Yeah.
It's really non-inventive. But what happened was I was talking to some friends. Since graduating college, we all live in different cities, so we have a Slack group just for our friends, and we were talking about podcast recommendations. Basically, all of us were sharing our top five that we listen to. And despite being friends for, 10 plus years or so, our tastes in podcasts were so diverse. The vast majority I hadn't even heard of. And it dawned on me that this kind of word of mouth recommendation engine happens in these silos, like my group of friends or other people's group of friends, but it's not, there's no kind of operationalized structure for it. A lot of people, when they need to find a new podcast, if they're not in quote unquote the scene, they go to the Apple podcast charts and just see what's popular, which is a pretty broken discovery mechanism. I wrote about it in a few areas, but I just wanted to have a non-biased place where, I can recommend podcasts, I can review podcasts, I can talk about industry news. And basically anything that people interested in podcasts can take in.
Yeah, it's really cool, some of the stuff that you've been writing about recently. I know, by saying I have a blog, which is like one tier of it, and then not only do I have a blog, but I have a blog about podcasts, is like, it's not maybe the coolest thing that, you might say to, the next person, but like, I think some of the stuff that you're writing about is really fascinating stuff, and I wanted to ask you just a couple of general questions about sort of podcasts as a whole, because, for people like I would assume you and I who have been listening to podcasts for, years now, it seems like this is the norm. But there are still a great deal amount of people who do not know what a podcast is. So what do you say to people when they ask you like, yeah, podcasts, like is it this niche thing? Is it like, how popular are podcasts really?
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard because, like you say, we're kind of in our echo chamber. So you know, you and I talking versus, you know, talking to my mom or talking. I moved to Texas recently, and you know, it's not as technically, I don't know, forward as I moved from San Francisco. So it's a whole different idea. But if you look at the Edison Research stuff, podcasts are growing. But what's surprising to me, and maybe it's again because of this echo chamber, they're growing at such a minor clip. I don't have the stats in front of me, but the familiarity of the term podcast has been growing at like a 2-3% overall. And I think the people that have listened, or maybe it's the familiarity, is like around 45%. So it's still under half of the U.S. population. So I think going to your question, is it niche or how do I introduce it to new people? It's really remarkable because there's the older generation, because I think a lot of this is split on a generation, that to them it's radio on demand. Or if they're unfamiliar with podcasts and you describe the idea of radio on demand, then it kind of clicks because these people have listened to, whether it's talk radio or NPR or anything else, they kind of understand that concept. But the on-demand part makes it, you know, the podcast. So yeah, I think we'll continue to see a growth. And I have some thoughts coming out, I believe on Monday. I'm not sure when you're going to post this, about where podcast marketing is wrong. And basically the thesis of my thoughts there is, if you're creating a new podcast and you're marketing to other podcast listeners, you're really shooting yourself in the foot, because like I said, you're marketing to under half of the population. So, you know, Serial probably is the most popular podcast of all time to this date. If I'm trying to target Serial listeners, I'm still aiming for the smallest slice of the pie. Sorry about that.
Right.
In business, they talk about total addressable market. They call it TAM. Podcast marketing as a whole is aiming at this super small slice versus the greater audience of the people that don't know about podcasts. And yeah, there's generational thing and people that will never get into podcasts. But for me, I'd rather target the bigger population sample size than the smaller. And as we've seen, podcast listening habits are so ingratiated, they're so habitual and routine oriented, that even if I recommend a podcast I love to a friend of mine that respects my recommendation, they're probably not going to take it initially. You know, you kind of have to force right. that and break it in, because they have their podcast they listen to on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and to swap out one of those with something brand new takes kind of a leap of faith. So I think there's a whole shift in podcast marketing that needs to happen for the Edison Research numbers to go from 2-3% to like 5-6-7% year over year.
Sure, that makes sense. And for me, you know, I always thought that podcasts really like this perfect medium. And, you know, you mentioned some of the things that people love about them is obviously the on-demand thing, but the ability to, you know, carve out time in your day where you don't have to be watching TV for the news. Like, it was probably about a year or two ago where I first started to notice that my TV habits were kind of dwindling a little bit. And I was getting a lot of that same information, whether it, you know, was politics or whether it was sports or what have you. I was getting that same information from my shows. And the beauty of it is that I could also, you know, fold laundry at the same time, or I could also, you know, do whatever at the same time. And that's why I always thought that, you know, sort of podcasts were perfect. But what I wanted to mention to you about, you know, some of the marketing and sort of money stuff about this is that, in your opinion, why do you think that maybe, you know, while there has been steady growth year over year of the industry, why do you think the money hasn't totally followed it yet? I know because, you know, there's this recent story in the New York Times where I believe they talked about a podcast, Pod Save America. I'm sure you're familiar with them. They're kind of killing the game right now. Yeah. So they did a story about them, and they released a couple of their numbers. And I found it really fascinating to learn that those guys are getting about 1.5 million listeners per episode. And this was done a couple of months ago, so the numbers may have changed by now. But those guys are getting about 1.5 million listeners. And the nightly news with Anderson Cooper on CNN is getting about the same number. But the money in terms of advertising, in terms of, you know, commercials or, you know, ad reads, they're still so different. So, like, why are 1.5 million viewers on a podcast or 1.5 listeners on a podcast so different from 1.5 viewers on the big screen?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think it comes down to two things. One, the general unawareness of podcasts from traditional advertisers. And two is the analytics behind it. So both of those things are being addressed with a variety of issues. I think the most telling is Apple kind of peeling back the kimono and giving podcasters the analytics that they need.
Right.
That's been missing for a while. Basically, as an advertiser, there's two types of marketing plays you want to do to a consumer. There's the direct response, which is the lower money, and this is what podcast ads have been to date. So when you hear a Casper mattress or Blue Apron or Squarespace or Simply Safer,
any of the same companies
ads you hear, like a variety, they typically end with a call to action saying, visit, you know, blueapron.com with a vanity URL, you know, with the podcast name in it.
Yeah. Use my code. Use my code is a great one.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so what that company and that podcast can do is it's very simple. You know, you look at the traffic coming through from that specific URL and you see the conversions. And that is what podcast ads have been to date. And that is small fish. Direct response marketing is akin to affiliate marketing. And yeah, there's money in it, but it's not the buku bucks. It's not the Super Bowl ads. And if you think about, you know, to touch on that, if you think about a Super Bowl ad, they don't say anything like that. There's no call to action with a vanity URL saying like /Super Bowl. You know, at best, mm-hmm. there'll be like a Twitter hashtag for you to continue the conversation. But Super Bowl ads are all about branding. You know, they're car commercials telling you how cool you'll be if you order the car, or beer commercials telling you how fun you'll have. And the brand ads are where the big money is at. And those haven't come to podcasts for, again, the two reasons I mentioned at the beginning. Traditional advertisers aren't sure what podcasts are, do people listen, etc. And the analytics up until very recently haven't been there to show that, yes, people are listening. A download actually means an engaged listener. And so the early numbers we're seeing from Apple are actually pretty encouraging. They're showing that the vast majority of listeners listen all the way through. They're not skipping. They're not dropping off. And so once that kind of becomes more inculcated in advertisers' minds, that like, we need these engaged listeners, that will be big. And, you know, to be honest, I think podcasts are they're a perfect advertising space because of, like you said, you're busy the majority of the time you're listening to one, whether you're commuting or working out. But you're not busy in attention. You're busy doing another activity. And so you're not skipping through.
Right.
If you think about TV commercials, I don't know anybody that doesn't have a DVR and skipping stuff. And sure, I can skip an ad on a podcast, but I'm not taking my phone out of my pocket. I'm not looking at my phone when I'm driving, etc. So there are people that do that, but I think it's a lower number than the people who are skipping through DVR.
I do too. And I actually have noticed recently, and maybe this is just been the past couple of months or so, but I do think that some of these ads are going to change. And I have seen recently that I think Walmart and Coca-Cola have been sort of dipping their toes into some of the podcasts, at least that I listen to. And they've been doing some of these, hey, you know, go to Walmart and buy some Coke, you know, just like really simple stuff at the end of shows and, you know, where a normal like Casper Mattress ad read would be. So I think and I hope that we're hopefully going to start to see a little bit more stuff like that. But one thing I did want to touch upon that you mentioned there, which I thought was really interesting, is that not only are, you know, we talked about the TV viewers versus podcast listeners, and sure, maybe it's the same number, but that money hasn't quite transferred over yet, is this idea of not just a viewer, but an engaged viewer. And, you know, you are much more likely to listen to a podcast ad just, you know, way more than you would for a TV ad. You're more locked in. And yep. I wanted to ask you if you have heard of this game that's been sort of like sweeping the nation to me and all of my friends the past couple of months is HQ. Have you heard of this HQ iPhone game?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is starting soon. I think it's starting right now.
Yeah, no, very familiar. And I've been intrigued on what they're doing lately with the sponsored native ads. I think Nike or Under Armour or something ran that like 250K one the other night.
Right, yeah. And that's, you know, I've been super fascinated by this place because, you know, that place every single day has, you know, let's just call it like 1.5 million or 2 million eyeballs. And they are the most engaged eyeballs you could possibly have. Like it's like it puts TV to bed, it puts podcasts to bed, like things like that with engaged viewers is so hard to find. And to get something like that where it's, you know, a silly game for 15 minutes a night, but it's getting those people so engaged in something. So the fact that they've sort of branched out and this advertising with, you know, with Nike, and they did a game with Ready Player One, the Spielberg movie that came out this week, which sort of like fits into the mold of, you know, gaming and VR and stuff. But like those types of things where you're getting engaged viewers versus just people like idly looking at their phones when they're watching a TV is like is so important. And I'm just wondering when the money is finally going to transfer over.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a fascinating trend, and HQ is a really good example. That's a really interesting to bring up. Once they start marketing for like Black Mirror, then we'll know we've gone like full circle.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I did want to mention to you was this really interesting piece that you wrote in February of this year, and you wrote it about gaming the iTunes charts, and you talked about, and this was like really, really fascinating stuff. And you wrote about this this show called Kick-Ass News, which I have not listened to since you wrote it. But I don't know. I don't want to, you know, step on the story. Do you want to maybe sort of like tell me a little bit what you were trying to uncover there?
Sure. So like I said earlier in the show, like it or not, Apple Podcast charts are the discovery mechanism for so many like typical podcast listeners. I don't know how you want to tier them, but the podcast charts are super influential. And I'm trying to think of how to articulate it, but basically nobody quite knows how they come about. The VP from Libsyn, Rob Walsh, has ran a ton of tests and has basically reverse engineered how it comes out. And the only metric that matters, some podcasters think it's reviews and ratings, but none of that really matters. It's only about new subscribers. And he has the exact calculation, so you can look him up if you'd like to learn more about it. But basically, it's new subscribers over a week that are heavily weighted towards the last 24 hours. So in my anecdotal evidence, I follow the charts every day because I don't know. I guess it's interest, but it's just you do notice trends. And his tests and my anecdotal evidence, they coincide. So you'll see when a new, you know, major true crime podcast right now, Empire on Blood, when that's announced, boom, it's number one. Okay, it's beating Pod Save America. It's beating This American Life. It's beating Joe Rogan. You know, staples of the podcast empire. So it's very unlikely Empire on Blood has more listeners than any of those podcasts I just mentioned, but it makes sense because they have more new subscribers.
Right.
So after following this for about 6 months or so, I started noticing a weird trend. Basically, these podcasts are jumping around a bit. Even the staples I just mentioned, it's very hard for somebody to maintain a top 10 because you have to maintain this steady influx of new subscribers. But there was one podcast that stuck out, and I didn't really think much of it for a bit, but it was Kick-Ass News, and they were always hovering between 4 and 6. And for the most part, I'd listen to every top 10 podcast except for this one, and nobody's talking about it. You know, nobody's on Twitter in any of the podcasts, Slack channels or Facebook groups or anything like that. So I was curious and I listened to it, and it's a good podcast. You know, to be honest, it has great guests. It has actors and politicians and comedians and writers and really top tier people. But it's just odd to see that level of consistency. So I dug a bit deeper, and iTunesCharts.net is basically a website that scripts and scrapes from the Apple charts. So basically every day it just pulls what are the top 10 and keeps a recording of it. So I pulled some numbers from that and deduced that Kick-Ass News in the 6-month period that I was tracking this was in the top 10 more than any other podcast, I think except for The Daily. But even then, that's tremendous. And their standard deviation, so the rank they were in, was within such a small margin. Again, it was that 4 to 6 range. This American Life will go from like 3 to 12 to 7. Joe Rogan will hop around from like 4 to 20, you know, all those. And it was just odd that they were always within this window. And so I started looking more, doing a little bit more research, and I talked to Rob Walsh again a bunch, and he said something that stuck with me is like, most people look at the top podcast charts, you know, see what podcasts are top 10 or top 20 or what have you, but not as many people look at the top episode charts. Right. And the top episode charts are unique in that they don't matter about new subscribers. Those are purely based on streams and downloads in the last week. So those are a true measure of popularity. So The Daily that I just mentioned, that was the only podcast that had fewer times outside the top 10 than Kick-Ass News.
Yeah.
On any given day has between, I'm just spitballing here, but it's something like 4 to 8 single episodes within the top episodes, top 200.
Yeah.
And usually they'll have like 3 within the top 10 because it's a tremendously popular podcast. It obviously produces episodes basically every day. And so that was really odd. And doing a little bit more research, I looked up some more suspect stats and kind of deduced that their placement within the charts was suspect. I don't know how they've done it. And again, it's still speculation and it's a theory. But talking with more people, I have heard success stories of how people have gamed podcasts in the past. And because it's on this new subscriber thing, that's the only metric that matters. You just need an outside source that gets you new subscribers. So if you have, you know, 1,000 friends that are just dedicated, they can subscribe every single day, unsubscribe and resubscribe, and that'll probably get you there. But as popularized on Silicon Valley and, you know, coming from San Francisco, there's click farms from usually from Asia, where basically you can game. Some tech companies do it to game their daily active user count to make it seem like they're a lot more popular. And that's what Silicon Valley, the show on HBO, depicted.
Right.
But it would theoretically be possible for a podcast to hire a click farm to continually subscribe to their podcast to get you there. Because based on our evidence, based on Walsh's tests, the top podcast chart being on new subscribers and the top episode chart being on purely downloads and listens, there's a major discrepancy between Kick-Ass News and their new subscriber base and their listener base. Throughout the 6 months that I chronicled this, they never had one episode within the top 200 podcast episodes. So that was the red flag.
Right. That's what sounded the alarm. And I noticed in your piece, which I will send a link out, I noticed in your piece you tried to reach out to looking Ben Mathis, the Kick-Ass News host or founder, and you were not granted a request for interview. Since you had published a story and it's been a little while, have they since reached out to you and wanted to chat, or how's that gone?
I'll be a little bit careful with my words.
Okay. Yeah, only say what you can say. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Sure. So I will say that he never provided a comment for the article. If he did, I would have updated it. He was displeased with the article after it came out, and I never got a response until after the article came out. And encouraged me to take it down.
I'll leave it at that. Okay. All right.
The article is not taken down.
No, it is not. I have to ask, it sounds like you have obviously a lot of experience in, learning about shows and finding new shows. What are some of the shows that you listen to right now? And how do you find new shows? Because you're showing other people how to get shows, but how do you find new shows?
Sure. You're putting me on the spot, so I got to take out my phone real quick. how do I find new shows? I'm fortunate enough to be a part of a lot of communities and that discuss podcasts and that are able to curate them. So there's a lot of recommendations I trust. Also, by having Discover Pods, I get a ton of inbound requests, probably 20 a day. Really? Over Twitter and email of people saying like, "Hey, check out my podcast." So I will say,
no one would do that. Come on.
There's never a shortage of, people of podcasts to check out. Yeah. Today, actually it's funny. Today I got a DM from somebody, that I had never talked to. And all it was their Apple link to their podcast. It wasn't even check it out. It was just the link and that was it.
Great.
So they're just getting to the point.
So how did that not work?
Yeah, it's weird. I gave him a thumbs up emoji. Like, congrats on having a podcast. Let me check so what I'm listening to, I will say, and some of your listeners, and even putting this out in the ether, I might get berated for. I had held off from audio dramas for a long time. And I think it's just a personal choice. When I read a book, 98% I only read nonfiction. So I didn't listen to a lot of audio dramas. And then I dabbled my toe in it. We had a piece go up by Will Williams the other day yesterday, about 10 audio dramas. And when I was going back and forth with her on the draft, you know, I decided I should probably check these out. And since I've kind of opened the floodgates for audio drama, I'm hooked. They're fantastic. So I listen to Limetown and Homecoming and The Big Loop and Bright Sessions, and they're all fantastic. Podcasts I was listening to before that are your staples. I think Reply All and 99% Invisible, for my money, are the best bang for your buck on any given episode. I think Reply All's two-part series called Long Distance, where they go to India to confront a phone scam, I think is probably the best podcast episode you can listen to.
Wow.
It's just everything that you need in a condensed form. So you can listen to Serial or S-Town or This American Life or tons of others, but in such in two relatively short episodes, I can't imagine you introduce somebody to podcasts and get them to listen to that and them not be hooked on the medium as a whole. What else am I listening to? I like The Illusionist a lot. I spoke with Helen Zaltzman a bit ago, and that's a great one. My sports. So I guess I should clarify how I separate my podcasts. I use the Overcast app.
As do I. Great app.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Ever since Apple sort of transformed their podcast app, I use it a lot less.
I don't use Apple at all anymore, but Overcast is perfect. I can't recommend it enough. But I think you mentioned something earlier, but basically there's the news, there's the recent events, there's things that you need to listen to with some urgency, with some recency to really grasp. So sports and news are kind of my two main ones. And so I bucket those into a smart playlist that I have as timely. So anything, like I said, sports, The Daily, Pod Save America, anything news or about recent events is in my timely folder. And then I have my evergreen folder, which are the Reply Alls, the 99% Invisibles, Science Versus, Bill Simmons, I really like, Ear Hustle, things like that. And then So those are things I can jump into at any given time. I don't need to listen to within a week of them coming out or anything like that. And then I have binges, which those are typically older podcasts that I can just shoot through the whole season or multiple seasons of.
Okay. And I want to ask, I mean, you brought him up, but when, you know, what's going through your mind when Bill Simmons throws you a retweet on Twitter? I mean, that's like, that's gotta be pretty cool.
Yeah, that was surprising. I'm trying to think. I think I published the gaming, the podcast charts on like a Thursday, and it was doing okay. And then Sunday, I'm probably just making this up or completely wrong, but I think Sunday he retweeted me, and I use Google Analytics, and it shows like the people on your site right now. And this was like 2 hours after he retweeted me, and there was like 500 people on the site at the same time. So that was kind of nuts. And then what was the other crazy one? So Andrew Jenks, I don't know if you follow him or his podcast, What Really Happened. It's tremendous. He's a documentarian that's done work for HBO and ESPN and CNN and a bunch of others. But he has a podcast that basically explores past events and kind of deduces them and cuts through the noise of, you know, what the media was saying. And like, actually is the title, What Really Happened, is an accurate depiction. So I did a feature on him in an interview, and it was, I thought it was really well done. And The Rock tweeted it because The Rock, his production company, $7 Production, is one of the producers of the podcast. So that was major too.
Yeah. Wow.
The Rock.
Bill Simmons and The Rock. You might have like a 2020 like presidential thing going on there. So what else I want to ask you? Oh, one other thing. So you mentioned that you sort of have a lot of these shows where you kind of go back into the bank and you can listen to some of them in a less timely manner than you would with others. But I got to ask you specifically for your habits. Are you one of the, you know, 1.5 times speed guys or 2 times, or, you know, I've seen some nutty people out there with like 2.5 speed. Are you listening on one, or are you listening on something else? Cause it's been very popular.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of topic of the last few months. I will say I don't have the multitask or attention span to really speed it up that much. I just can't comprehend what's going on. Some people are smarter than me, so they're able to. For interview podcasts or anything with not that much production behind them, I will listen again on Overcast with Smart Speed, and I'll do it at the I don't know what the number is. It's the second plus sign after one, so it's like 1.2.
Yeah,
it's something super small.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll listen to those at a minimally increased pace. But for other things, like 99% Invisible, for 20,000 Hertz, I just binged the second season of Dissect. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's,
no, I haven't.
It's a deep dive into Kanye West and his album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Oh, man, that's right up my alley. It's my favorite album ever. Maybe I should listen to it.
It's incredible. He, the host, Cole Kushner, probably butchered his name. He goes episode by episode and breaks down the beat and the lyrics and the context of like what Kanye was going through. So things like that, where sound is very important and the editing behind it is crucial, I don't speed up at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do on some things that are a little bit more newsy, kind of like it sounds like what you may do, is I speed it up on things that I just need like the information and I need it. But stuff with more production value, like, you know, one of my favorite new podcasts that I listened to this year is the show called The Weekly Planet. It's like a comic book movie podcast about two guys from Melbourne, Australia. And one's a comedian, one's more of a little bit more hardcore in comics, but they both love comics. And I would say on its best day, it's a comedy podcast. It's less information, less news. But with something like comedy, like timing is so important, and like knowing when to pause and when to, you know, come in and when to interrupt, like stuff like that is important. So I think people get a little bit too carried away with speeding up on stuff like that, because like, what are we eventually going to be watching, you know, sped up movies or like, you know, it's like there's something to the silence and the pace of a show, like a comedy show or, you know, something like a drama or whatever.
Yeah. I was talking with Jonathan Goldstein of Heavyweight about this, and he actually had an interesting perspective. So it's funny that you brought up movies, because silent movies, how we know them now, are sped up. And so he brought up that as an example. He, along with basically every major podcaster I've talked to, thinks it's crazy that people will speed listen to their podcasts, but then they'll go on to admit that they speed listen to other podcasts. So
cowards.
yeah. Helen Zaltzman of The Illusionist, she had a pretty realistic approach. She said something along the lines of, look, I'm a creator. I put it out there. I recommend you listen at normal speed, but that's all I can do. I understand people are going to listen at their own pace. And I was like, all right, well, that's a realistic, you know, idea to way to look at it.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's most of everything I have. The only thing I wanted to end it with you, is, you know, you sort of know the industry, you know, almost as good as anybody for my money. What kind of advice, because I'm sure you get people asking this all the time, like, whoa, how can I grow my show? Or how can I make my podcast great? Or, you know, what are the best things to do? What are my best practices? Like, what do you say to those people?
Oh, wow.
What's the one line magic sauce?
I mean, the only thing you can do to really cut through the clutter is to make a good podcast and just focus on the content. Don't try to please everybody. Going back to the Dissect example, this guy is a self-proclaimed nerd. He deep dives into Kanye West and spends like 45 minutes per song, like deducting the beat and the lyrics. It's as niche as you can really get. And he was just featured in Time as one of the best podcasts that you need to listen to. So there, it's that old saying of like, try to please everyone and you'll please no one. It's kind of do what you know, do it really well, create a good podcast. Don't worry about listeners. They'll come. That said, there's little things that you can do to strengthen your brand, I guess you can say. And because discovery is a broken mechanism with podcasts, and when I say that, if some people compare podcasts to blogs, and the biggest issue with that comparison is blogs have SEO, so search engine optimization. If you go to Google and search for whatever you're going to search for, a blog has the ability to gain their way into that search result by optimizing their content, by making sure that they're appearing in the right places, by increasing their backlinks, things like that. Podcasts, by nature, by being audio only, aren't being crawled by any search engine. So there's that discovery mechanism is missing. So the way to get discovered from Google, which everybody needs to be, is to make yourself more discoverable, which is a terrible thing to say as I'm saying it. So things like podcast transcripts, having more written content that Google's robots can crawl your site and pick up exactly what you're talking about. All of those things are important. So making sure you have a site that has your sitemap indexed and is optimized and you have transcripts and be engaging with your fans. One thing that I've been following is, have you listened to Disgraceland yet?
No, I haven't.
So basically there's not a silver bullet to making a popular podcast, unless if The Rock produces a podcast tomorrow, it will be famous because he's The Rock. But most of us aren't The Rock. So there's no quick answer. There's no get rich quick scheme. But what Disgraceland does is they've like evangelitized. Oh God, I'm butchering more words.
You'll find it.
the whiskey's kicking in. Their audience and built this really strong community. So what Jake Brennan, the host of Disgraceland, does is he'll read one review on air from iTunes or wherever, and you know, give a shout out. He'll send free stickers. He'll give swag. He has a Facebook community group that he's actively involved in. So things like that. It's just being available, talking to your fans, making sure you have avenues, whether it's social media or, you know, 20,000 Hertz has a phone line you can call in. Things like that go a long ways as well, because like we mentioned at the top of the show, it's word of mouth is still a main driver for podcast recommendations. So if you can make fans of 10 people and make them diehard, and they tell one person and they tell one person, it's kind of that like that pay it forward word of mouth that just spreads virally. That's how it's going to have to go. And I think that's the best, kind of the best way you can create a successful podcast, because unless you're The Rock, you're going to have to start at square one.
Well, I think saying that not all of us are The Rock is perhaps the best way to end the show. All right. Well, Kevin Goldberg, discoverpods.com. If there's anything you want to plug, I know you said you have a piece coming on Monday, on the website. You want to plug that and just a little bit about what's going on next week.
Oh yeah. Just check out the site, if you're interested. It's pretty basic. If you're into podcast recommendations, news, reviews, that kind of thing, we put out a new article almost every day. So whether it's commentary on the industry or reviews or podcasts you might not have heard of, yeah, give it a check out. Follow us on social media. We're discover_pods on Twitter. And yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
This is cool. I mean, at this point, is there any chance that any of my listeners are still here? We just talked about the podcast industry for 45 minutes, but I hope everyone's still here, and I really appreciate you coming on, and maybe we'll talk again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, buddy.